This is the Paula Gordon Show. I am Paula. Bill Russell is with me, and we are both with Dr. Connie Smalljohn in Taos, New Mexico, talking about viruses and what we can do about viruses. Your work with the United States Army is developing ways that you can keep our military people all over the world, and presumably other people as well, keep folks well when faced with viruses that are known and unknown.
Right.
How do you do that?
Well, we were talking about DNA vaccines, and since we're starting with RNA in our viruses, we have to make it back into DNA for this vaccine, and that's relatively easy to do now with molecular biology. We use a part of a virus that is a retrovirus, is called, and Retroviruses are strange RNA viruses. They normally make their RNA back into DNA, and HIV is one type of retrovirus, but there's a lot of others as well that don't cause AIDS. But they make a particular protein that's called a reverse transcriptase, and that means it can make RNA into DNA. And that was the key event in molecular biology coming to light in over the last 30 years is the discovery of that protein, because now we can use that protein to do a lot of manipulations of genes. So the first thing we do is to use that protein to make our RNA into a DNA, and then we can put that DNA gene into a small round DNA that we get from bacteria called a plasmid. And we do that such that the gene, say it's our hantavirus gene, for instance, that we want to make a vaccine out of. Now, we have it in this round piece of DNA from a bacteria. And also in that DNA, we've put a piece of another DNA virus called cytomegalovirus. And that piece of that DNA now allows our gene to be made inside of a cell we put it into. So our DNA vaccine actually consists of a little round piece of bacterial DNA that we've put our hantavirus gene in. And the studies that we've done with DNA vaccines, we use actually a gene gun to deliver this DNA to our test animals.
What is a gene gun?
A gene gun was actually developed for use in plants, for making corn plants transgenic or whatever you wanted to do with plants, but over the last, maybe 8 years, has been found to be very useful in people or in animal models as well. And what a gene gun is a pressure gun. It has an air pressure in it, and you put your DNA on the outside of real tiny gold beads. They look like gold powder. And you put them in the gun, and then when you blow them out of the gun with this high air pressure, it deposits them in skin, and it doesn't hurt at all. It feels like a puff of air on your skin. It's loud, so that's a problem. But you actually blast your DNA right into your skin cells, and the gold beads help carry it right inside the cells, so it's not just in between cells, so the DNA has to get sucked in. This way you can put the DNA right inside a cell where it's now available to make your gene into the protein that you want to make the person or animal immune to whatever it is. And we're working on DNA vaccines for a number of things, including hantaviruses and Ebola virus and tick-borne encephalitis. So we have gone as far as monkey studies with a lot of these, but not to people with the DNA vaccines yet.
I assume you expect to succeed in doing this. Otherwise, you wouldn't be. It's fun, but it's not that much. Nobody would fund
nobody
it.
Nobody pays for fun.
The fact that you enjoy it is tangential. Assuming that you develop this set of vaccines, the idea is to keep people from getting sick. How do you deploy that? Knowing that there are diseases in a certain part of the world and we're going to send soldiers over there, you give them the vaccine for that, or do you try to vaccinate people for everything that might possibly make them sick?
Well, how it's been done in the past with traditional vaccines or any vaccines for the military is the first option that you said. You know they're going to go to that region, so that's what they get. You couldn't possibly vaccinate military population to everything you can think of, but the DNA vaccine strategy is one way that you could do multivalent vaccines, because it takes
multivalent
meaning to many different agents. Say What our goal would be, of course, is to get one vaccine that would protect everybody from everything. Well, that's not realistic, but you can get several things into one vaccine. And we would like to be able to do it in the most cost-efficient and the least painful and the less downtime for the soldier. Because if you give a painful vaccine, that's not good for them either. If you give them one that gives them a fever or makes them feel bad for a week, that's not good. So we're looking for some sort of a vaccine mechanism that will be easy and cheap.
Presumably, if you did this for the military, having done the research, the same technology would be available to civilians at some point.
Sure, and it already is. There's been a DNA vaccine trial for hepatitis B by a company that makes the gene gun, and there have been several other trials for DNA vaccines for malaria, for HIV. I mean, there's nothing that's marketed yet as a DNA vaccine, but I think it's definitely a wave of the future. The biggest problem for DNA vaccines right now is the delivery, and gene gun is one way to do it. A lot of people have tried intramuscular injection of DNA, but when you do that, it takes a real lot of DNA because it's so inefficient. It has to get somehow across the cell membranes and into cells, and that's not easy for DNA to do. So I think the big advancements in the next few years are going to be getting that DNA into the cells, not so much changing the technology of the DNA vaccines themselves.
Help me with this. If you're going to change my DNA, am
We're
I going to be okay?
We are not going to change your DNA because these bacterial round little plasmids I've talked to you about don't go into your cell nucleus. They have nothing to do with your own DNA. They just stay out in the cytoplasm, which you have nothing going on out there with your own genes.
So this has to do with changing the way my body responds to viruses. But you're not re-engineering me.
No, there'd be absolutely no interaction. I mean, that's one of the concerns about DNA vaccines is they're worried about integration of the foreign DNA into your own DNA.
This is good. I like them to worry about these things.
Oh, yeah, I do too. I don't want my genes re-engineered either. But it's not a problem so far. It's not been shown to be a common mechanism. And when it has been looked at, it's been found that foreign DNAs are actually taken up by you all the time. You have bacteria in you, you have viruses in you all the time. And those events occur at a small number of incidences or relatively small. And
mostly they don't make me sick. We just live together.
Right. Or your genes know how to get rid of them. You don't need them in there, and they'll either stay there and not hurt you, or you'll get rid of them, or perhaps that's what makes us old. Who knows? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of that isn't known. But so far, the DNA vaccination itself has not been shown to have a deleterious effect on your own genes.
I'm glad I asked that.
Me too.
You said earlier that a lot of these really nasty diseases are RNA diseases. Is there something special about RNA diseases that makes them virulent, or is it just happenstance?
I've thought about that too. I wonder why it is that so many of these hemorrhagic fever viruses are RNA viruses. There certainly are bad DNA viruses too, like hepatitis B is a bad virus. But the hemorrhagic fever viruses are RNA viruses, and I really don't have a good thought on why. I mean, possibly skipping the DNA portion of it. They don't have to go into the nucleus at all. So they carry along their own machinery for making themselves. They don't have to use any of the host cell functions to do it. And maybe that just makes them more efficient at replication and making more of themselves.
Is this one of those things that qualifies as hobby research?
Well,
we
not
think
if you're
of it
at
as
Harvard, but I guess if you're at the Army Institute of Infectious Disease, it does.
The efficiency argument, let's take this back to how the work you do affects people. Because you say, and I have said, that this applies to soldiers. But the military has lots more than soldiers. There are all kinds of people who are required to support the soldiers, and they too presumably are all over the world. And then when you get to those places where these diseases are, those people get these diseases. In a way, it seems that for all that you are quite focused on being the United States Army Medical Research Institute, that there's a much larger calling in this that is a public health calling, if you will. I don't know the right word for it, but that you're talking about people who get sick, whatever side of a battle that they are on, and that you at least potentially have a way to help address that.
Well, definitely, and we even have that as a goal. I mean, we have our funding to do our mission, but clearly almost everybody that's in a public health area like this has a wider idea of where these vaccines should go. And the military's developed a lot of vaccines that have been in civilian populations over the years, and some of those vaccines wouldn't be available at all if they hadn't been developed by the military. And we certainly don't ever intend to keep a vaccine and not let anybody that wants it have it.
Well, I partly say that because there are people who tend toward the paranoid who say, yeah, but you're talking about Fort Detrick, and there are big walls, and that's where you develop all kinds of really wicked things for biological and chemical, I guess, biological warfare. And there is a military part of this. But I think most people probably would think first about, you know, the Army's developing stuff to kill people, when in fact you're developing stuff to keep people alive.
Well, first of all, we don't have a biological warfare program. That's just, you can say that a million times and maybe nobody will ever believe it, but to the best of my knowledge, there is no biological warfare program. We do have a biological warfare defense program, and it's a fine line in some cases. What we have to do as part of our mission is to decide, what are we going to do if we're hit with a biological warfare threat? What if somebody dumps smallpox all over our country? How are we going to respond to that? And we have to look at, what's the newest technology? Could somebody be making things worse and come up with a bug that we have no idea what to do about it? So when you start thinking about how do you look at that without looking at it, you can either do it all theoretically, which is what a lot of it is, or you can look at specific virulence factors in a virus or a bacteria and say, this is what makes it bad. So now at least we know if somebody made it worse, we at least know what the worst was.
You raised the question, what are we going to do? Assuming there's been talk recently about smallpox, we thought we'd eradicate and have in the world at large, but apparently there's still large quantities
right.
In various labs around about the world. Have we figured out what to do about that?
Well, the world right now is focused on smallpox for good reason. It's a terrible virus. It has been used for biological warfare. I mean, it's a bad thing, and we're not immune to it anymore. But we have programs going on with vaccinia virus. We have, in fact, a collaboration with the National Institute of Health to do some studies. My own lab is working on making monoclonal antibodies, human antibodies that could be used to treat people that would get sick. The biggest problem we have is that these antibodies we are making are to a surrogate. They're not to smallpox because we can't work with smallpox at our institute. So we have to test them against monkeypox or against vaccinia virus. But since we know what the entire gene structure of smallpox is, we at least know that what we're looking at is to a similar region in a less pathogenic virus.
I would assume a lot of this, too, has to do with coordination at some level between the governmental and specifically military side and the public health and the private health facilities round about, and I suspect that's not trivial either.
We'll come back to that in just a minute, Phil Russell, who is with me here on the Paula Gordon Show. Our guest is Dr. Connie Smalljohn. She is the chief of the Department of Molecular Virology at the United States Army Medical Research Institute for Infectious Diseases. We'll all be back together in just a moment.